Welcome to another episode of The Cubic Report. We're glad that you could join us today. Our guest is Rebecca Evans Drury from Leesburg, Ohio. She is a licensed professional clinical counselor with the state of Ohio. She is a Christian therapist. She also has a Master of Arts degree in professional counseling from Liberty University. So welcome to the podcast, Rebecca.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to join you on the Cubic Report. I think it's an excellent platform to discuss social issues that we do face today. So I'm honored to join you. Thank you for having me.
Rebecca is a known counselor for people going through grieving and loss. She has been asked to speak at seminars and gatherings because her expertise is always welcome and in demand, as it is today for this podcast. We are all acquainted with grief. Even a prophecy of Jesus Christ in Isaiah 53, verse 3, speaks about the one who would become acquainted with grief, that he understood it, he knew it, and that's how he could relate to us. Grief could be as a result of death, first and foremost, the most grievous of all things. It could be the loss of a job, a marriage, anything that we have in life that's a loss. This past week, I've had no less than 6 painful tragedies that I have come into contact with, not that I was directly involved, but having been in the ministry and hearing about things, I feel responsible for in some way to acknowledge them. 2 young ladies, younger before their time, who have died, people that we had prayed for over a decade about their health, and they both died within just weeks of one another, and that has been a shock to my wife and me. We've had the death of close friends, dear friends around us, and we're coming to the age, my age, where I have people who are younger than me who are dying. We had a tragedy this last week where one of our elders, who also is a chiropractor, after the last day of unleavened bread, his clinic burnt down, and they had services in that clinic earlier in the day. A great tragedy in what they're going through. And then just one more thing is that I really have a hard time talking about and people don't understand, and that is the war in Ukraine. Since I'm involved with knowing people there and we have provided aid to those areas, we have people of common spirit and belief that are assisting. And people in this country just get tired of hearing about the war. It's a statistic. It's just something in the news far away that you don't even want to hear, that's covered up by other tragedies. And yet to us, it's very grievous as we hear reports of the death. We had even some in our family who have died over there. There are people who receive dire reports of their health, receive diagnosis of cancer or other disease that is very, very tragic. And so we have a lot of that here happening. And we're not really fully prepared or even know exactly what to follow through in different events. I'm going to ask you at this point if you could just tell me a little bit about yourself and your work in the area of grief counseling.
Sure. So in the world of counseling, I've worked in private practice for several years. Obviously, I've sat across from many people, whether it's an elderly man who lost his wife and grief counseling with him, or perhaps a teenager who has been sexually assaulted and I'm working with her in grief work, or I've worked with many who have divorced and had betrayal in marriage, and so working through some of that grief. There's various grief that I've hopefully been able to walk alongside others in. And in that process, what I've come to learn and understand is that each individual is going to have to walk this path and define what's going to help them. Mm-hmm. So there's not a number of years or months and bam, we're over grief. It doesn't work that way. Each individual needs to take the time that they need to process and grieve and walk this heavy path and, you know, themselves and define the support systems that they need. I have found with some individuals, one teenager, what was helpful for her was that each week I would give her an assignment to paint. And so she would come back And this week she would bring a drawing of herself and how she felt that week. Mm-hmm. So for 1 week it would be red because she was experiencing anger and it was portrayed through her drawing. And the next week, perhaps she would come back and used a lot of green tones and that signified that she had some growth that week. So she was able to process her grief through artistic work. I've had men who have taken an axe and gone to the woods and chopped wood and been able to express their anger through chopping wood. Mm-hmm. And that was very beneficial for them. And so when I sit across from individuals who are grieving, I really try to assist them in identifying where they're at in their grief, what stage and what they're experiencing, and to really collaborate with them in finding healthy tools to process in a healthy manner. You know, we can always go to drugs and alcohol, pornography, or sex addiction, and that is not a constructive way to process grief. It can cause more damage. And so I try to assist individuals with finding the healthy coping skills, the healthy ways to process. Mm-hmm. And so I really encourage you, if you find yourself grieving, give grace to yourself. It's going to be a long road. There's going to be days that your backpack is very heavy and you're carrying it 24/7. Mm-hmm. There's other days you're going to find yourself that the backpack was set aside and you were able to laugh and smile for a moment. And that's okay. You don't have to feel guilty about that. Mm-hmm. But throughout your life, your backpack is going to be on your shoulders and then off. Mm-hmm. It's this process of processing grief your entire life. And so I encourage you to find healthy coping skills that work best for you and that support system that will really show up and be comfortable in the uncomfortable with you as you process.
So I just wondered how many of us are mentally and spiritually prepared.
It certainly feels like we are surrounded by grief. You mentioned the war and the various discord that we're feeling, but there's also natural tragedies that seem to be ramping up, and it seems like grief is surrounding us. Typically, when I discuss the topic of grief, I start with the analogy of a snowflake. And with that analogy, snowflakes all look very similar, as does grief. When you look at the topic of grief, it seems similar, but in fact, each snowflake is very different. And so I want to start off at that point, and that each grief is very different. You can take perhaps two widows who have lost their husband. One widow maybe had a fantastic marriage and relationships with males, such as her father or brothers or friends. And so when she's grieving her husband, she's grieving the loss of her best friend, where another widow perhaps didn't have a healthy marriage, and maybe there's abuse present throughout their marriage. And so she's still grieving her husband, but she's also grieving the loss of a marriage that she thought she was going to have and didn't. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about grief, I want us to remember that each grief looks very, very different from one another.
From your presentation, that really struck me, because it takes skill for a person who's a caretaker or caregiver to be able to not have a one-size-fits-all way of talking to people.
That's right. And when we're showing up to comfort one another in these moments, I think a lot of times we use our words because we want to comfort and we want to fix, right? We're typically solution-oriented, so we want to fix. But unfortunately, in the midst of grief, there are no words to take this pain away. And so what I've often found is not comparing grief or even projecting my grief onto someone else, but learning how to sit in those uncomfortable places. One of my phrases that I often remind myself and others is we have to get comfortable in the uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that looks like sitting in silence mm-hmm. with someone else in their grief.
One of the greatest compliments that I had one time is a person who, this is about 15 years ago, had cancer, and I even took him to the treatments that he had, and then I would just sit there, you know, in the lobby, in the waiting room lobby, and just wait for his treatment to be over with, and, you know, take him home, and, you know, really didn't do anything. I didn't do anything. Well, after, you know, several weeks or a month or more of this, I took him in every week. He died, and I don't believe I even did his funeral, but I was there, and the family knew me. And then I heard from the family later on, like months later, that thank you so much for all you did, for your coming and just sitting there in the lobby, in the waiting room lobby, and just being there. And I felt, wow, that's quite a compliment for really not accomplishing much, but it was important to him at that time.
Yes, there is importance in just sitting up. It's a presence, it's a solidarity, it's a support, and really learning how to sit in silence and get comfortable in that. When we grieve, I know the first thing that comes to mind is the loss of a primary loved one, and that certainly is the most tragic of grief. There are other areas that we experience grief. You mentioned before there was a situation where a chiropractor lost his practice and where the church meets. And so certainly natural disasters is something that we can grieve. I have experienced losing a home to a tornado, and it's very tragic, and you absolutely grieve those things. Sexual assault, a lot of times people don't realize, but when you're sexually assaulted, it's normal to grieve that someone took that piece of you away without mm-hmm. permission. Mm-hmm. Perhaps there's identity changes, role changes. Maybe you've been a teacher for 30 years and you're retiring. Well, that's a role change that you can grieve. That's a piece of you that's changing. Mm-hmm. When you become an empty nester, your children move out. That's another role change that you can grieve. There's also betrayal in marriage. That is one I see a lot of grief in, that you thought you had a healthy marriage and perhaps destruction occurred. And so that is something that is very normal to grieve. You can grieve a loss of a job. You can even grieve if someone has broken into your home. That is someone violating something that's yours, taking something away that is yours. And then again, of course, grieving the love of a family member or friend. There are a couple different losses I like to talk about. The first being a transitional loss. Mm-hmm. So a certain transition in your lifespan. This can be happy. This can be graduation, or perhaps a new baby, job loss, or a new job, or moving to a different state. These are all transitional moments in life that we can often grieve and kind of learn how to deal with this adjustment. Mm-hmm. A second loss can look like a relational loss. So this can be divorce, death, perhaps an estranged relationship. Another loss is an impact loss. This impacts us. This can be abuse, rape, mm-hmm. violence, and illness. It can even be an injury. Perhaps we were very active. We've suffered a stroke or an injury where we're not able to function how we did before. That certainly impacts us. Mm-hmm. So we can find grief present in that. Environmental factors. I think COVID did a number on us. It changed our environment. It changed our world. I remember when COVID first hit, we had to take our girls, you know, the school shut down. So we had to take them out of school and homeschool. And I remember grieving that, thinking, this isn't the life I planned for my children. So environmental factors can definitely have an impact, and we can grieve those losses. And then the last loss I want to touch on is intangible losses. Mm-hmm. This can look like the loss of safety or security. Maybe we have lost trust in someone. Mm-hmm. Maybe we had goals or dreams that are no longer achievable. We had a plan for our children, and they've decided to go complete opposite way of what we thought for them. This can be difficult. if we've even lost a child, you know, we had dreams of having grandchildren or seeing them get married. And so that is no longer reality. And so that's very normal to grieve.
Mm-hmm. You know, you brought these things out, which is very, very interesting, because when I first wanted to speak to you and do a podcast, I thought we were going to be talking about death, because it was about, Rebecca's really good about talking about grieving loss and death. You know, that kind of comes up as the first thing. And I realize, and really, but I was hoping that we'd get into things beyond that, because death is pretty much, you know, it's there, you got to deal with it, it's horrible, and there's so many things to do with it. But some of these other less tangible things to other people, where you're going through your heartache, and people just don't know. In the book of Proverbs, it says, only you know about the hurt and about the heartache that you're going through, and people don't understand and don't know. And what even grieves a person more is when people don't appreciate what they're going through or say the wrong things. And this is where I find some of the things that you have said in your seminars to be very, very helpful.
Yeah, it can be very lonely, right? If we don't share this grief with someone else, whatever it may be, whatever we're grieving, it can be very lonely. And that kind of brings me into, I want to briefly touch the five stages of grief. Elizabeth Kubler and Ross developed the five stages. And the first of those stages is denial. And it can look something like, this cannot be happening to me. It's numbness. It's shock. Maybe you're avoiding reality. Your world has stopped. I remember going to a family member's funeral, and I was in shock. I was in numbness, and we pulled up to a stoplight, and I looked out the window and saw a gentleman mowing his grass. And I thought, here he is going on with his day. The world is continuing. Life is continuing, and my world has just stopped. That's the denial stage.
Mm-hmm.
The second stage is anger. And I'm going to touch a little briefly, more briefly on this in a moment. But anger can look like, why is this happening? Why did this happen? I do want to say not everyone experiences anger. Mm-hmm. A lot of people do, but you don't have to experience anger in order to properly process your grief. Mm-hmm. There's no right or wrong way to grieve. There's no linear motion. So please know that whatever you're feeling is how you need to process it. So not everyone does feel anger, but we'll briefly touch that again in a moment. The third stage for Kubler and Ross is bargaining. And this stage looks like, I'll do anything to change this.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to find meaning why this happened. It's so important to tell your story in this stage. When my family and I suffered a tornado and lost our home, I quickly got us into family therapy because I didn't know how to walk two young girls through the loss of their home. But what I found super helpful is my mom immediately had my daughter start journaling their story. And that was so profound looking back, because they were able to take what was in their heart and mind and express it in a healthy manner. So they journaled and they processed through that. I wrote an article and I sent it into a journal. So if you can either verbally express your story, write it down, that is going to help you in processing your grief. And this is such an important step. So even if it's finding a trusted friend or family, please find that safe place to just tell your story, because it will be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth stage in grief is depression. And that sometimes looks like, what is the point of going on? You feel hopeless. You feel overwhelmed. And in this stage, I want to give permission that if you feel that your depression is too much at this point, please seek guidance from your primary physician. During some of my hardest moments, I went to my physician and she prescribed me a very low dose of anti-anxiety medication.
Mm-hmm.
And I was only on it for 6 months, but it was what I needed to help me through that stage and that period. And mm-hmm. so I tend to be very holistic, but I also value modern medicine and its use. And so if you find that depression is really heavy, please weigh that option for yourself. The fifth stage is acceptance. And this doesn't mean everything's okay, but it rather means it's going to be okay. You explore options, you establish a plan, and you learn to move forward, not move on, because your loss is part of your identity and your life story. So you don't really move on from that, but you learn how to adopt that as part of your story and move forward.
I know that it's so important to be able to have some confidant that you can express things that are really totally off the record, because you need to express the depths of the way you feel, even the way you may feel about God, you know, the way you feel about things that were very, very solid and very stationary. And then all of a sudden your ground has shifted, you have fallen down, and some people may even say that God and I are not on talking terms right now. So, you know, you have to have some outlet for that. Otherwise it could go into a very dark cave that may be hard to get out of.
That's it. And again, that's where you find that friend or confidant that is comfortable sitting in silence, as you can just divulge the deepest, darkest, heaviest words in a safe environment. And that's very essential. These stages are not linear, by the way. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you process stage one and move to stage two and get to stage three. It's not linear. Unfortunately, when you're grieving, it's a lifelong process. Mm-hmm. And so you may find yourself to the acceptance stage and establishing a new plan for your life. And perhaps 15 years down the road, you may be triggered and go all the way back to anger. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's a bit messy as you work through these stages and you bounce back and forth.
Then you seem to, or can find meaning to what you have gone through and what you have learned from it. In our family, we had the tragedy of my father died when I was a freshman at college at age 42. And then my mother died at age 58. And it was a very, very tragic event in our church. Both events were. And my mother was left with five children, and, you know, I was the oldest. I mean, it was very, 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 very traumatic, and we had quite a time processing that. She was brave. She understood the hope of the resurrection and all that, but that's really part of things. You have to deal with the current reality of things, and for a year or two, she was just rocking my little brother, who was 2.5 to 3 years old, you know, just crying all the time because he was just trying to process that. Abraham grieved for his wife Sarah. That's even mentioned, you know, in the Bible. People, when they die, there's periods of grief that they go through. But then even later, you know, decades later, you can see, well, what did you learn from it? How did it change the configuration of your family? What values and what strengths of character came to you? And then in the greater, even overall picture, you see how it fits in with God's plan for us and God's plan for us regarding the resurrection. So all that's added. And I know that in your seminars, you mentioned those things about some of the spiritual side of it.
Yes, it's, you know, unfortunately, it's part of our physical lives. You know, from the moment we're born, it's just part of this physical journey that we're on. And so whether you experience grief early on, such as you and your siblings and your mom, and I'm so sorry to hear that, it definitely shapes our life story, our timeline. It shapes who we are very early on when we experience grief early on. Others are fortunate not to experience grief until their latter years. But at some point, that's the design of this physical life, that eventually we will experience grief. And so it's learning, how do we make that part of our routine and life now? How do we go forward with this grief? And it's changed our story.
You know, my wife and I have discussed the fact that the day will come when one of us will be alone. I try to project myself in the moment if sure she should die. In fact, I would rather go first because I can't imagine to be, you know, without her. But there has to be a certain amount of thought given to this because, again, like you said, everybody's going to experience grief, and the day will come when what you have and that is so solid and right here, how could it change? It will change and things will be different.
And I think when we talk about that, if you look at the unity of husband and wife. And, you know, my husband and I have only been married 19 years, and the thought of the blessing of being able to live 60 years together, that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And the design of marriage is that you become one. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes it's important to give permission that when your spouse dies, there's pieces of you that also die. Mm-hmm. And so some of our identity as husband, wife, best friend, partner, that also dies. And so in some regards, there are pieces of us that die with our spouse. Mm-hmm. And that's very difficult to work through and to contemplate. But there are roles that actually we are losing as well, and we are grieving, right? Mm-hmm. I love the role of wife. And so one day, if I lose that role, that is going to be very hard because I love this role. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, that is part of grief, is that we lose part of ourselves when we lose a loved one.
I think it's important to know these things somewhere in our planning for life. But you kind of find it hard to want to even think about those things. It's just like planning for your funeral. You know, you just want to put that off. I don't want to talk about it right now. Do you want to be cremated, or what do you want? You know, you just don't want to talk about those things. But I think it's important to contemplate the probability of what you'll be going through.
And to process in a healthy manner ourselves, but then also to help others and learn how and how not to walk alongside others as well in their grief. Like we said before, each grief is different. So we kind of have to morph when we're the ones providing support. We have to morph into the support system that individual needs. So it takes a lot of attunement and really intentionality to walk alongside others in those moments. I want to briefly go back. I mentioned in the five stages of Elizabeth Kubler and Ross, the stage of anger. And I mentioned not everybody experiences anger, but in fact, quite a lot of people do. And anger is actually a secondary emotion. Mm-hmm. So if you liken anger to an iceberg, and the little tip that sticks out of the ocean is the anger. So sometimes our behaviors, our words, our actions come out in the tip of the iceberg. It comes out as anger. But the fact is underneath that little tip is a huge iceberg. Mm-hmm. And it's filled with things lying beneath that's fueling the anger. And so if you're experiencing anger in your grief, I think it's very important to take a moment and really dissect, what is that anger? What is fueling that anger? What defines that anger? Sometimes it may be that you feel betrayed or you're resentful. Sometimes you feel abandoned by your loved one, that they left you. Mm-hmm. And so it's very important to understand what really defines this anger. And then what do I want to do with this? Do I want to hold on to the angers of bitterness and resentful? Or do I want to somehow learn how to let go of that? And that's very tricky and very hard, and it takes some time. But the first step in that is really understanding, what is this anger? What does it look like? What emotions are underneath? And what do I want to do with this anger?
Mm-hmm. Well, anger itself is a secondary emotion, but nonetheless, I deal with anger or have dealt with anger in my career with ministerial services, is that we had a case where one time a minister was projecting anger that really was beyond the level it should have been. This is a long time ago. And we had to talk to him because his anger was lashing out at people and seemed unreasonable. But we were able to talk to him and really help him and found out what the cause of it was. It went down into the iceberg. It was above the tip. The tip is what projected out publicly, but below there, it had to do with growing up and the way his parents treated him and his abandonment by parents and his not being appreciated by his parents. And, you know, we were able to make good progress. He was able to be a very valuable person once the light went on about that, because we lovingly talked to him about these things instead of condemning somebody for being angry and fact, even fueling it further, I felt like we made some very good progress, which I'm sure that you do in your practice.
I see that a lot. I see projection. And in fact, I'm guilty of this myself, projecting that anger onto other people or other situations. And so it's important when we have a loved one going through anger or grief and you see that anger, just to really be patient with them because they're trying to figure out how to process this in a healthy way. But you're right. A lot of times anger does get misplaced and misprojected or projected onto others. So really, if we're struggling with that, taking a look at what exactly is this anger, where is it coming from, and then really giving ourselves the power to do something with it. What do I want to do with this anger? Mm-hmm. And certainly not projecting it onto others, and how do we get there? One other area when we talk about grief is kind of the physiological versus cognitive symptoms we may be experiencing. And so physiologically, I talk about what is happening physically in our bodies. So if you're going through grief, I often say scan your body from your head all the way down to your toes and notice what's happening. Sometimes our grief comes out in heart palpitations, mm-hmm. clammy hands. Maybe we have insomnia, we're not sleeping well, or we have appetite changes. We may be eating more or eating less. You can have some numbness in your arms or tightness in your shoulders, nausea. These are some physiological changes that occur when we're in grief. Certainly if we're noticing, oh boy, I haven't eaten in over a week, and sometimes grief looks like that, remind yourself, let's take a sip of water, let's take a bite of fruit. And that's hard to do when you're deep in grief, but that's the reality of our bodies mm-hmm. in grief. The cognitive side are changes that occur in the brain. And so there are definite hormonal changes that occur when we're in grief. If it's a regular day and we are not in grief, we are typically operating in our prefrontal cortex. And this is the very front part of our brain, right where our forehead is. And this part is responsible for our logic and our reasoning. Unfortunately, when situations occur, tragic occurs, and I think God designed this beautifully, actually. When we were hit with a tornado that day, I got my girls baths. I put them to bed. I went to bed and I was operating in the prefrontal cortex. Life was normal. Mm-hmm. But 2:35 in the morning, when I got the tornado alarm, I was no longer operating in the prefrontal cortex. That shut down. And that's good because I don't want to operate there and say, huh, let's make a list of how we're going to evacuate the house, right? That's not the time to operate logically. So I'm thankful the design is that my brain shut down. Mm-hmm. And I jumped into that limbic system. And there's a little, it looks like an almond. It's called the amygdala. Mm-hmm. And that's responsible for your fight, flight, or freeze. Mm-hmm. And so in that moment, my brain jumped into the limbic system and I jumped out of bed and woke my husband and girls and I yelled, "We have to get to the basement." And that served me well in emergency. Mm-hmm. And so it's a beautiful thing how the brain works. Now, in the limbic system, it releases these hormones. And one of those I want to talk about is the cortisol. And that's our stress hormone. Mm-hmm. Cognitively, we can stress that to the max. We can use all those levels to the max. And so sometimes that's when I talk about maybe it's time to look at the medicinal side and see if there's some medicine that can kind of calm that down for a little bit in our brains until we can calm the whole body down. So I just wanted to touch bases the difference between physiological and cognitive reactions in grief. Mm-hmm. And I'm so thankful that night of the tornado, I didn't just get up and leisurely create the list of how we're going to escape, right? That wasn't the time to be logical. But we don't want to get stuck in that limbic system. We don't want to reside there and live there. And so when tragedy happens, unfortunately, the reality is we do reside there for a little bit. But as we learn to process our grief and our tragedy, we slowly integrate back into the prefrontal cortex.
I know that when they, that there's different lists out of what to do in certain conditions and all that, you know, go find your radio that is battery operated, or, you know, do this and do that and make sure such and such doesn't happen. Like you had that tragedy with the tornado, you have no time to even know what you have prepared. You have to just do things immediately to protect yourself. I'd have a hard time to be able to kind of go through a little three-ring binder, you know, and go through the different things that have to when things are all happening around you. So it might be good to have these, some very, very serious and some very necessary things embedded in your mind so that when something does happen, you know what you'll do in general areas.
And that's it. As parents, we have these conversations. This is the fire escape route, or this is the, you know, tornado safety spot, in hopes that we'll never have to utilize that. But the reality is we don't know what's ahead of us. We don't know what's in the future. So having those conversations, and as you mentioned before, even the conversations of end of life plans, mm-hmm. we don't want to have these conversations. But I will say, should these situations arise, it is helpful that that plan is already established, mm-hmm. So that you can just move in forward motion without having to try to tap into logic thinking at that moment. So it is helpful to have a plan of action in place should something occur.
I would like to just go back to one point. We started talking about it, and you maybe have covered it adequately, but you were talking about walking alongside somebody who's going through tragedy, about things to say and things not to say. In your seminar, you brought out some very, very good points about what words to use, what things not to say. One thing that really struck me is that when we are with someone who's gone through a tragedy, the first thing we want to do is talk about ourselves, and people don't want to hear about you necessarily at that time. They don't know what to hear, but they certainly don't want to hear about, oh, I've gone through that, or I've had this, and I had my kid who was sick too with this, and you know, they need to have somebody who will be close to them, use their name, be kind to them, and know when to be silent and when to draw them out. Can you comment more about that?
Sure. I use another analogy of a backpack in grief, that when a loved one passes, we instantly are inherited with this heavy backpack filled with heavy rocks. And sometimes it's like a boulder that we have to learn how to just even get up and carry. I mean, the grief is just so heavy and burdensome. And so if you're a friend and you're trying to console, you know, the individual grieving, and you're starting to bring up your story and your grief, it's like taking your boulder and adding it to their shoulders. And of course, we don't want to add weight to their shoulders. So it's often good not to bring your experience unless you feel like it's warranted and welcomed. But try to leave your boulder, your backpack aside when you're trying to comfort someone else. We mentioned before, words are not always comforting. They don't take away the pain. So really be intentional with the words you use. I have had a lot of people tell me they love when other people come up and share stories of their loved one, just using their name, sharing stories, sharing intimate moments. It doesn't take the loss away, but it provides salve, so to speak. We certainly don't want to come up and say, I know exactly what you're going through.
No.
Again, we want to apply the snowflake model, that each grief is different. And even if we both have lost our husbands, it's not exactly the same. Mm-hmm. So really, if you can approach in that mind frame, seeking to understand their hurt, their pain, and remember, you're not going to fix it by words.
And one thing too is that people like to hear in a conversation, maybe down the road or a year later, about the loss and talk about their mate. Sometimes people feel like they don't want to hear that because that's painful to them. But actually hearing about the fact that you knew their mate, that you were friends with them, use their name and talk about it is something which is very, very comforting and very welcomed. And even like you said in your seminar, that the second year can be the most difficult one, because in the first year you have all this support, and then after a year goes by, you've missed a birthday, you've missed the Feast of Tabernacles, you've missed a lot of other events that have transpired in your lives, and you just realize it's just very hard, and that second year can be very hard. But to talk to someone, one of our pastors had a very good habit. He always sent flowers on the anniversary of anybody's mate's death, or in some way acknowledged it. And that was so welcome that they were remembered and that their pastor remembered a year later. And it just really lifted their spirits exponentially.
You touch on a great point. I think the fear often, you know, I've heard parents who've lost a child often say, I'm afraid I'm going to forget their laugh or how soft their hair was or anything like that. So it's very important to keep memories alive, to talk about them. We're never going to forget our loved ones. And so knowing that it is a loss that we carry, it's that backpack we carry for the remainder of our physical lives, and that this loved one was part of our story, it's very wonderful to hear their name and that other people are remembering them. So acknowledging the loss, acknowledging the individual are things that does actually bring comfort.
Well, Rebecca, it's been wonderful talking to you today. I just feel like we've touched the tip of the iceberg of many, many different matters that could relate to the subjects that you are professionally qualified in. It's been very encouraging, Rebecca, to hear you say these things and to give hope or to give information to our listeners about what to do in difficult situations of loss. So thank you very much.
So I just appreciate you having me, and I hope that, you know, I'm able to reach and touch others as they process their hurt and pain.
Well, you sure have. And I think that this will be very helpful. And I hope that we can have another one.
Sounds great. Have a great weekend.
Okay, you too. Thank you for listening to us today on The Cubic Report. We welcome you to share this podcast and tell your friends about it. We can be found on a variety of platforms, including Apple and Google Podcasts, Pandora, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audible, and many other platforms. You can easily find us at any browser address box by typing in the words, The Cubic Report, and there we are. Remember, Cubic is spelled K-U-B-I-K. So we'd love to hear from you. Write to us at vcubic@gmail.com. That's vkubik@gmail.com. Again, thank you for listening. Come back soon for more.